Senator Moran on the phone. Won't be able to take your phone calls during this time, but definitely be sure to tune in later on News Radio KMAN. You can go back and listen on the On Demand tab. Senator Moran, I believe I hear you.
You do. Good morning, Brady.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm out way west, Kansas, headed to St. Francis today for town hall meetings in the northwest corner of our state.
And I believe you had a town hall yesterday as well, didn't you?
Well, we did. In Great Bend, they continue to be well attended. Lots of conversation, concerns about what's going on in Washington, D.C. or not going on in Washington, D.C., and continued to be covered by national media. Yesterday was in Great Bend. We had MSNBC, NBC Nightly News, and C-SPAN. So apparently there are very few members of the United States Senate, particularly Republicans, who are having town hall meetings, so these apparently garner the interest of national media.
Well, that is true, and I've heard you say in the past, I believe a reporter asked you maybe a month or so ago why you were doing this when so many other of your colleagues aren't, and I think you've even maybe said in a few articles that some of your colleagues have asked if you're crazy or not going on all these town hall meetings, but why has it been so important for you to go across and still do these town hall meetings when there has been that attention and there has been that sort of attendance?
Well, you know, I'm certainly not looking for the national attention, but we've been conducting town hall meetings, listening stops for as long as I've been a member of Congress. This is the 1,250th town hall meeting, so 1,250 of these since I've been an elected official working in Washington, D.C., and I learned something from them. I would add something to this in just a moment that even makes it more important today than perhaps it was in the past, but I learned something. It gives people with an individual with a problem with Washington, D.C., what we call casework, somebody who's got a problem with the Department of Veterans Affairs or their Social Security check didn't arrive in the mail. Those are things that it gives people a chance for us to go to work to solve their problem. And it helps me prioritize the things that I ought to be most focused on in Washington. The thing I would say that maybe is a new feature of this, although it's certainly always been there, people today, perhaps more than ever, believe that no one's listening to them, that government is on its own mission without a lot of input or concern for the people that we all represent. And so perhaps an added feature of greater importance today is if we can do things that reduce the cynicism, the lack of connection between those who work in government and those who elect the people who work in government. If we can get a better relationship between the two, even when there's disagreement, that would be a great accomplishment. And every citizen ought to have the sense that the real reality that somebody cares and is paying attention to them. Again, even when we don't always agree on the right answer to every problem, people want to be heard. And you know, I've had people tell me that, particularly in today's environment, that the people who are coming to town hall meetings, it's more about politics. Some of them are relitigating the presidential election. I've been admonished that since you're wasting your time, these people are never going to vote for you. And my response, at least in my own heart or mind, is that I don't know who people are going to vote for, but regardless of whether they're my voters, they're still my constituents, and they deserve to have an opportunity to make their case to me and what they believe that they think is right.
I want to go back to those topics and the town halls and some other issues, but real quick, North Korea is obviously on everybody's mind right now. It's all across the headlines. Tensions are in a place I don't think we've really ever seen with North Korea. What's your take on these developing headlines that we keep seeing?
Brady, you're right, and I cannot deny the circumstances that we find ourselves in. I think they are different, they're unique, and more troubling than any time in my time in public office. And so there is legitimate concern about what's going on. I've asked for a classified briefing. I need more information. My intentions are to return to Washington, D.C. In the next week or two when this briefing is scheduled. And I guess I would say that I've become discouraged about the chances of success of diplomacy. Having said that, I would not ever suggest that we ought to give up on diplomacy. The alternative is could be horrific, but I don't have the sense that whatever we do and whatever is being said is actually leading to a different behavior by the leadership of North Korea. And I think it's very difficult. This is a given, and I hate saying it because it sounds so simplistic, but how do you get somebody who may be irrational, somebody who apparently cares little or nothing for the citizens of North Korea, how do you get them to modify their behavior? And again, the things that have taken place seemingly have done little to change that behavior. There is, the development of UN sanctions, presumably going to reduce the revenue flowing to North Korea by $1 billion. China joined us in that effort. Those are positive steps, I suppose, but it doesn't seem to change what's happening with North Korea and their continued development of nuclear capabilities with deliverability.
And you mentioned China, and that's such a key in this whole issue. I mean, I admit I was pretty encouraged as well, seeing that they also came on board on those sanctions. Is there anything more that they can do or that we can help them do?
Well, I mean, what we've learned is that this reduces by $1 billion, and I was told that's one-third of the revenue generated by these exports, particularly of coal. So I suppose there's additional steps. But again, it doesn't seem as if North Korea leadership cares what the sanctions might mean to the well-being of people in North Korea. So while it's encouraging that China is supportive of these recent efforts, I think the fact that still remains is that does it modify, and at what point when will we know if that modifies North Korea's behavior when it comes to nuclear capabilities? So what I was looking for in that classified briefing is additional information about the economic condition of North Korea, what other things we could do, but also the military side of this. What are our capabilities of taking out in a military way the silos, the locations of where these devices are? Are they spread across the country? What do we know? And I guess the final, we can take this conversation whatever direction you want, but my final thought at the moment is I want to make sure that Congress is fully engaged. I would say this regardless of who's president. I think we need to have a Congress that takes its constitutional responsibilities seriously when it comes to the declaration of war or the beginning of a military engagement. We ought not defer to any administration except in the cases of immediate self-defense. And on behalf of the American people, members of Congress need to engage in this issue and have the debate, the discussion, and potential vote on what the United States' reaction is or will be.
Brady Bowman here with U.S. Senator Jerry Moran, speaking with us live. He's on the road getting ready for some more town halls. And, looking at this North Korea situation, and you're the junior senator of the state, but I'll just say you're older than me. I won't say your age, but there's a lot of comparisons with what we're dealing with right now with North Korea to kind of a new Cuban missile crisis in a lot of ways. How do you feel about those sort of comparisons?
Well, I am not old enough to really have experienced the Cuban missile crisis, but I have.
Not that I was suggesting that, Senator, of course.
I studied it in history and perhaps the difference was we were dealing with the Soviet Union. And while it still was a threat to us, enemy, it appeared that both of us, the United States and the Soviet Union, were rational and had a thought process and were willing to take some risks, but not unacceptable risks. And what at least I don't know, and it doesn't seem to me that we know as a nation, how the North Korean leadership thinks and what is their motivation and how do you begin to diffuse this buildup that is a way that satisfies their needs as well as the safety and security of the United States. So I have no doubt but what we can learn from the Cuban Missile Crisis, but it seems to me the actors are different. And perhaps the leadership of North Korea is rational, but it's hard to see that in the circumstances we find ourselves.
And I think some of those circumstances that seem a little different than in the past when it comes to North Korea. North Korea has always been saber-rattling. That's kind of always been their thing, but the Trump administration is kind of matching that right now. Do you feel like matching saber-rattling with saber-rattling's a good way to go? How do you feel about what we're seeing there?
Well, the explanation that I could provide, although I don't know that it's an is maybe the Trump administration is upping the rhetoric, not for the purposes of changing North Korea, but for the purposes of getting China's attention that in the absence of additional help from them or China solving this problem, that the United States will respond in even more dramatic way. I don't know that that's the case. But as I've listened to the rhetoric, it could be a message to China, not a message to North Korea. Having said that, I mean, it is troublesome to see the rhetoric continue and the response is escalation, or at least escalation in rhetoric and additional threats, in this case to Guam or the area around Guam. The other part of perhaps this is not related exactly to this question, but one of the things I'd like to know in a classified setting is what are our capabilities for missile defense? We have been testing missile defense for a long time. We've had a recent success, but do we have the ability, in the case of an attack against the area around the island of Guam or the continental United States, do we have the ability to bring that missile down before it does damage to the United States or our allies, and that then would give me greater understanding of what it is we can and should do and how we should be saying it.
Brady Bowman with U.S. Senator Jerry Moran, live on In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. Just shift gears and talk about an issue that I'm sure has come up all the time in your over 1,200 town. And is that over 1,200 this year?
Oh, no, 1,200 as a congressman, as a House member, and as a senator.
Okay, overall. Okay.
My goal has been to cover the state of Kansas, town hall meetings in every county. And there were 69 counties in my days as the House member, now 105 counties.
And talking about an issue that I'm sure has come up, health care is always a big issue right now. What have you been hearing on the road? I know that it was quite a summer for you guys when it comes to healthcare and some votes. You were one of the early detractors on some initial versions. You did vote for the skinny repeal. What have you been hearing the last few days on the road?
Well, healthcare is still front and center with many, many Kansans, and it is the tenor or the significance of this issue is maybe, I don't think the issue is all slightly diminished. It does seem to have taken a little bit of a more backseat in the topic of conversation over the last few days than it was a week or two ago. But here's the message that this is at least my view as to what needs to happen, and I explain it to Kansans, and they seem to understand and have some, although, again, there's diversity of opinion about this. In my view, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, It hasn't accomplished its goal of lower prices, and in fact, the conversations I still have with Kansans are the problems that they have in healthcare for many are related to the cost, the premiums, the cost of healthcare, the premiums, the co-payments, the deductibles, unaffordability. And the goal of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, was to improve affordability, and for many, many Americans and many Kansans, that didn't happen. On the other hand, people needed coverage who had pre-existing conditions. And so the question to me is, can you thread the needle in a way in which you address the issues of rising premiums and the cost of insurance, and it's still at the same time take care of people who have pre-existing conditions? And again, this issue is so personal with so many people. Often the conversations are spiritual and emotional issues.
All right, looks like we're losing the signal of the senator, and unfortunately we're just about out of time anyway, but we'll definitely try and have him back, because we often try to have him back on here quite a bit. Let's go ahead and go to a quick break. We'll be back on In Focus on News Radio KMAN.
KMAN's Morning News is brought to you by ESB Financial, member FDIC, equal housing lender. With ESB Financial's mobile banking, we're always in your pocket.
You can't see me unless you're on my webcam, but I'm holding a giant clearance sign because it's summer clearance time at Little Apple Honda in Manhattan. New cars are used. Everything's priced to sell immediately. At Little Apple Honda, huge factory to dealer incentives. Make new 2017 Honda Accord, Civic, CR-V, HR-V, and Odyssey.